Welcome to the 10K Collective podcast. Listen, if you want hacks, my friend, I'm afraid you're in the wrong place. Our philosophy has grown out of the 10K Collective London Masterminds. Members, by the way, make between $500,000 and $7 million a year in e-commerce, most on Amazon. Many have doubled revenue in the last 12 to 18 months. If you're that kind of person, this podcast is made for you. We're not puritanical. We use hacks. We just don't think you should focus on them if you're building a real business. Instead, we focus on what's been proven to work in the group. Real brand building, clear strategic objectives, courageous long-term goals, and long-range thinking. If you like that focus, keep listening, and welcome to the 10K Collective. Okay, so look, we've mentioned air freight and ocean freight. Let's get on to that question. What are the sort of critical numbers and thresholds between air freight and ocean freight? And let's just to make it fun, we put air express into the mix, right? So really speaking, I think we have three different options, don't we? So tell us first of all about the difference between air express and air freight, because I think there's some confusion there. And trust me, certainly importing to the USA, the US import authorities do not treat them as interchangeable at all, which is when I had my fun problem. So let's talk about this and clarify it. What's the difference between air express and air freight?
Absolutely, yeah. So into Europe, we offer a sort of mix of services, really, just to accommodate the customer's requirements, whether that's speed or price or whatever it may be. And then, as you've mentioned, a couple of those services are express and also sort of standard air freight. Express services are great for smaller shipments. So something you need over here quickly, that isn't too big, because as soon as it starts to get quite sort of big or heavy, it's going to become a bit sort of not cost effective, really, quite simply. We recommend customers that they look to utilize the express service for shipments up to around 100, 120 kilos in weight. So it's a small number of boxes, really. And that door-to-door transit time can be anything between sort of 3 and 5 days, depending on obviously customs formalities here in Europe. So it's a pretty quick service if you're looking to just get a bit of a sort of buffer stock over to Europe quite quickly to ensure you don't run out of stock. Or quite simply, if you're just looking to start small and just test the marketplace with a new product, that's quite a good way to go. The sort of slightly larger shipments that make Express Courier a bit cost prohibitive, so anything sort of 120 kilos plus, that also may be palletized freight rather than loose boxes, and we can look at sending on a standard air freight service, and that will go on your sort of standard passenger aircraft, and generally speaking, and that process, although still quick, it does take a bit longer than Express Courier. You're looking at anywhere sort of between 5 and 9 days, depending on the routing of the freight, and also obviously from the US, more importantly, the known status of the shipper, whether they're known or unknown, which can have quite a bearing on transit times.
Okay, so tell us a bit more about that then.
Okay, so obviously security measures within the US, especially when exporting from the US, shippers effectively either known or unknown, and that can be checked on the TSA database. If you're known, if you're classed as a known shipper, your goods, your freight can effectively fly on passenger aircraft. If you're unknown, it has to go on a sort of freighter-only aircraft. And freighters are sort of few and far between, obviously, whereas passenger aircraft, obviously, multiple a day. So that can add sort of 48, 72 hours into your transit time, potentially, as well as a bit of extra cost onto your rate. But one of the things we do at Regional Express is if we do come across a shipper that is unknown, we will obviously move that first shipment for them as unknown, and then we will work with them to try and make them known for any future shipments.
Okay. So if they're unknown, that has to be on a cargo-only aircraft. Yeah. Okay. Okay. Interesting. Wow. So they ship. This is particularly if you're shipping from the USA, specifically shipping out of the USA into the UK or Europe, right?
Anywhere out of the USA, yes.
Okay.
USA to anywhere.
Or anywhere else. Okay, so that would actually apply if they're also shipping to, you know, Japan is the other likely place they're going to go to as the third biggest Amazon marketplace in the world. Okay, interesting. Well, that's interesting. That's worth knowing. And again, this just comes down to the nuances. With the nuances with a lot of things, don't make that, they make a little percentage difference. My experience of the nuances with freight is that the nuance on a piece of paper that or on a website, you think, ah, oh, that doesn't make much difference, suddenly results in major delays and big cost differences. Whereas if you don't have a wonderful photograph of a product, maybe you convert it a tiny percentage different. And it's a kind of nuance, you know. It just always strikes me that when something goes wrong in the freight or supply chain generally, it's just normally nastier in my experience. It sounds like what you're saying bears out as well. I mean, I would also point out just from personal experience, and I don't know if you want to talk about this, but again, this was going into the USA, so it would be a bit different in Europe. But I had a supplier who'd been using UPS or I think DHL, one of the Air Express guys with their own sort of customs clearance channels. So I'd stopped using a customs broker in the US because it hadn't been needed and it was working fine. And then my supplier used some probably unknown, it may have been related to the thing you were just talking about, somebody who was not maybe a known carrier, but they had it in the freight section, but of a basically passenger aircraft. And when it landed in the USA, they didn't have any kind of clearance channel set up. So is there a sort of UK or European equivalent of that problem?
Predominantly not. I know from a sort of express courier point of view, if a lot of overseas companies are sending their product on their own DHL UPS account, wherever it may be, directly to Amazon, Amazon obviously won't act as the importer of record here in the UK. But goods do tend to get stuck at that point and generally return to origin because there's no one here in the UK to pay the taxes, which again, I think as you hinted on earlier, is another reason why you sort of use a freight forwarding company really, or a customs broker to ensure they take care of that on your behalf. But any shipment coming through air freight, standard air freight into the UK, obviously that will generally, as with ocean freight, will be followed through by the freight forwarder to ensure that's customs cleared and processed in the correct and timely manner.
I can't stress enough, really. I kind of sound like a bit of a broken record here, but this is partly from painful personal experience and also watching clients, sometimes very experienced, as I said, and sometimes less experienced in. Yeah. And the danger is when you've been in business for like decades, you think you know all there is to know in your business and you do within a limited scope. As soon as you go to a different country or a different supply chain, I'd beg you not to assume you know. Yeah. There's just so many car crashes that I've seen. And it's just a specialist area as far as I'm concerned. I think it's just a specialist. You wouldn't probably try and manufacture your plastic goods in your shed. You know, yes, I did have one client who actually made his own kind of face lotion or something in his kitchen table because he trained himself to do it. That's pretty amazing. It seemed like good stuff as well. But, you know, you wouldn't manufacture plastic goods in your shed. You probably shouldn't try and get goods across the world through different tax regimes yourself either. I'm sort of, it sounds like I'm doing a great big pitch on behalf of Neil, but that's the opposite way around. I've asked Neil on because I've seen this car crash. I mean, that's, you know, I can't stress enough. I don't care who you work with. I mean, Neil obviously knows his stuff and this is a chance for Neil to show what he knows. But nevertheless, whoever you work with, I'm just pleading with you now, please don't DIY this stuff. It's so goddamn painful. You should be focusing on marketing, product development, strategy, not trying to be an amateur freight forwarder. Anyway, enough of me banging on about that. So tell us about sea freight. At what level of units or size or weight does ocean freight start to make more sense?
Okay, so ocean freight obviously generally is a significantly more cost-effective price per unit than air or express courier. But generally speaking, you need to send larger quantities to avoid sort of minimum surcharges and to make it extremely cost effective for you, really. So to make ocean freight worthwhile, you need to be sending at least one pallet, really, at least one cubic meter. Otherwise, you'll be generally hit with minimum surcharges by the carrier at that point. So we always recommend, obviously, at least one pallet, two, three pallets, whatever it may be. If you're obviously a very successful seller and you're looking to move larger quantities in on a regular basis, then obviously sea freight is definitely the way to go for you anyway. And at that point, if you are moving larger quantities, there are different types of services that you can utilize. You've got your obviously consolidation services, which are great if you're looking at sending a small quantity of cargo, because effectively freight forwarders like ourselves will receive a few pallets from yourself in origin, and we'll consolidate that with other customers' cargo and share a container over to Europe. However, if you're getting to sort of that break point where you may have 10, 12, 13 pallets of your own cargo ready to move, you may well need to start looking then at full container loads. That could start to be the more cost-effective and quicker option for you. And again, that service is offered by ourselves, and we can quite simply guide the seller to the most efficient and cost-effective solution available, really. So if we do see, one of the things we pride ourselves on is if we see the sellers getting to a large quantity that may be more cost-effective on a different option, we notify them of that. We say, hey, look, how about we do it this way?
Consolidation, first of all, let's talk about that. So we're kind of moving up the chain of you know, the quantities and bulk and weight, but I guess also that, you know, it implies the unit sales or that they're doing is better or the revenue is better. So we've gone from air express to air freight to sea freight in general. So we're talking less than container loads versus container loads, right? So what is the sort of break point? I think we talked about this in our preparation for this, actually. What is the break point between less than container load versus container loads? Where does that come roughly?
It could be somewhere as low as sort of 10 to 12 pallets worth of cargo. So maybe around sort of 15 cubic meters or so.
So it could be 12 to 15. So actually 12, 15 pallets. So that's quite, what sort of percentage of let's take a standard container, which is what, the 20-foot standard container, right? Let's take one of those as the smaller end of things. What sort of percentage of that is a 12 or 15 pallets going to fill?
That's going to, if you've got that sort of pallet volume, that's going to fill and exceed the space in a 20-foot container. If you've got a 20-foot container you want all for yourself, you, generally speaking, you can get 11 UK standard pallets in one of those containers. What we do encourage sellers to do as well, if they do choose to go down the full container route, is to maximize the space in that container as much as possible, because obviously they're paying for that space, whether they have 10 or 11 pallets in it or whatever, they're going to be paying the same rate. So quite often you don't want to palletize your freight before loading it into a full container load. You want to load loose boxes so you can really fill it up and make it as airtight as possible, to obviously ultimately reduce your unit price per product.
Yeah, and I guess a lot of this game just does come down to just unit costs, really, and cash flow. I mean, it's those two things, which is terribly unsexy, really, compared to the latest Amazon hack, but it's how actual real people run real businesses that I know. It just comes down to getting this stuff sorted. And again, it's not just about the lowest number possible, but the predictability of it. Again, coming back to the thing we were talking about, okay, you know, yes, in theory, your Chinese guys can squeeze extra boxes in and they're not, and it's cheap as chips to ship it across the USA. But then, you know, if you can't unpack it, it's or without damaging stuff, then it's going to lead to angry customers. If they haven't dealt with the import costs in China, in America, that's going to cause massive delay and it could cost you a load of money. So again, that there's cheap and then there's packed and then there's cheap but unreliable and there's packed but broken, right? Again, you just gotta, it sounds like the voice, it sounds obvious, but again, you've talked about it yourself, that you've seen people, you know, with those deals in China that they offer that. I've just seen too many of those that it's that penny wise pound foolish, as we call it in the UK. You know, it's that you just have to balance different factors and it kind of sounds obvious, but you know, I'm banging on about a lot of stuff that's obvious in a way. What the funny thing about freight that always strikes me is, on the one hand, there's a lot of just common sense, and on the other hand, just a ton of things that you wouldn't have thought would be a problem that you couldn't even imagine existing that do, right? That's been my experience of freight. So what about, let's think about a couple of things. We talked about that sort of point. Coming back to consolidation then, that's slightly smaller than the whole container thing. Let me dig a bit more into that. How does consolidation work generally?
Okay. So yeah, generally, a freight forwarder will run a weekly consolidation, whether that's from location in the US, China, wherever. It can be multiple locations across China, etc. They may have a container coming out of each port each week. And basically, we or whatever the freight forwarder is will collect or receive the company's cargo into our origin warehouse. So we receive a couple of pallets into Shanghai for a customer, and we will load that into a container with anything realistically up to sort of a dozen or so other customers' cargo, depending on obviously the volumes they're looking to ship as well. And that would all be consolidated in to the container and shipped across, obviously by boat to arrival UK. Once it arrives here in the UK, the container will be moved across to one of our warehouses here and devanned into our warehouse. From there, each individual consignment within that consolidation can be customs cleared and then released for collection and onward delivery to whatever the final destination may be. All in all, it's a slightly longer transit time than if you were to ship a full container load, because obviously with a full container load, you've got the luxury of moving the container from the port directly to the final destination, whereas with a consolidation, it has to come through a sort of customs warehouse first, where it needs to be devanned before being sort of separated and moved onwards.
Okay, but then I guess you get some of the economic advantages of using containers. It makes total sense. You have to have some compromises. So as to transit time compared to a whole container, which makes sense. Now, tell me about whole containers. You just mentioned shipping. You have the luxury of shipping a whole container from, say, let's say it's being shipped out of Shenzhen, Shanghai. It's not like one for, basically, it's amazing. China's just a whoppingly huge country with a massive population, but actually such a big percentage of its export trade goes down to four cities on the south coast, right? Shenzhen, Guangzhou, what else? You mentioned Shanghai. I can't think of what the other one is, but there's so it's likely to be from very specific destinations, right? But then let's say you're shipping into the UK. Can you take a container directly to the door of Amazon in the UK, or have you got to break it the supply chain anyway at some warehouse somewhere?
If you're moving a full container, there are certain Amazon fulfillment centers here in the UK that will accept full container loads. We, however, do encourage sellers to unload container at a third-party warehouse initially, such as ourselves, and then forward it on a trader to Amazon as palletized cargo at that point. The reason we say that, obviously, because cargo in the container, it can shift, it can move during transit, obviously whilst it's on board a vessel. And obviously if you're delivering a full container to Amazon, the doors are only going to be open for the first time when it gets to Amazon. And if there has stuff that's shifted or moved, they may not unload it based on health and safety grounds, which could add horrible expense to the seller's outlay, really. So we always encourage it to come via a warehouse such as ourselves. We'll then check it, we'll repalletize it if needed, and then send it on its way.
And again, that's a classic example of that general principle that seems to emerge, which is, you know, you might save some money by going direct to Amazon and it seems more efficient. But if there is a chance, whatever you got, it's a kind of risk assessment is percentage of probability of happening versus times the size of the problem. But if it's, I mean, what sort of size of problem? So let me quantify those two things. How often does stuff shift? If you're going directly, and how often does it get rejected, and what is the potential and the cost if it gets rejected?
Yeah, I mean, previously when we did used to deliver full container loads into Amazon FCs here, we were getting a very high percentage of rejections, sort of as high as 80%, I would say.
It was, oh, wow. Okay.
Incredible amount. So we quite simply made the decision and really do advise our customers strongly against it. Because if you do decide to send it direct to Amazon, no problem at all. But if they do reject it, you've then effectively got the wasted delivery fee for that container transport. You're then going to have to pay for that container to go to another location.
And what sort of cost are you looking at for that roughly?
Yeah, I mean, that can vary massively depending on where it's delivering to in the UK.
Okay, let's take an example. I mean, let's say that you ship something to Peterborough. Which are the FCs? Will I give me an example of FCs where you could ship directly with the container?
Let's go for an FC around the Midlands. That's where most goes these days, is sort of Coalville or Coventry. From Southampton Port, you'll be looking at sort of a few hundred pounds for a sort of container delivery up to there. If that goes wrong, then obviously that's effectively lost money. And then we've got to find an area or a warehouse locally, or bring it back to one of our warehouses to unload that container and then make sure it's safe, reload it to another truck and then deliver again to Amazon. So quite quickly, your charges can spiral out of control and suddenly become sort of a couple of thousand within a blink of an eye, really.
Yeah, so £2,000 or something, etc.
Yeah.
Okay, good. So look, I mean, I think that great. You've really. I'm glad that I followed my train of thought there, because you quantified that very well. I mean, 80% chance of a £2,000 extra cost. That's an absolute no-brainer. That this is not merely good advice. This is like, absolutely don't do it. Do not ship direct to Amazon, right? 80% probability of something going wrong is horrible. I mean, I was thinking it would be like 5%, 10%. Yeah.
I mean, it can be made right. I mean, if you work, if you're buying from manufacturing China, if you work closely with them over time, there's absolutely no reason why you can't build up a relationship where they're loading is to a standard that is expected and okay by Amazon to be received. So again, it's just one of those things in the supply chain. You can spend the time on it to get it right, and it's certainly in the long term it would be worth making it right. But for a lot of sellers who maybe just import fairly sort of irregularly for full container loads and so on, and just look to get it over quickly and cheaply, then maybe coming via a warehouse like ourselves is the best option.
Yeah, that's really, really helpful. And this is exactly why I try and get experts and just dig into the nitty-gritty detail. Because if you're not selling on Amazon already, this is going to be boring as hell. But if you're selling on Amazon, you've experienced paying £20,000 to have a container shipped back to you, you're going to be flipping listening right now. So talking of listening, I'm aware that we've got to quite a longish episode, so I think we should stop there. But that's really... Just one more question on that question having a number of units about multiple SKUs from multiple suppliers. Can you consolidate that? Because obviously that can, if you're trying to fill a container or get close to that, then that is obviously sometimes means the logistics in China get nightmarish. Can you help with that side of things as well?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, for sure. So if you've got four or five different suppliers producing four different products for you in China, ideally, you don't want to send four or five different shipments. You want to sort of consolidate those together into one. So, yeah, providing on the location in China, that's certainly a service we can offer through our origin warehouses. We would receive the cargo in there and then group it all together and load it for you. Generally, if all the suppliers are in the same sort of regions, sort of southern China, sort of the Guangdong areas, for example, then absolutely, it's no problem at all. We can consolidate for you. If you've got suppliers sort of jotted around China, maybe one down in Shenzhen, one up in sort of Beijing area, then obviously that's a long old sort of truck movement or rail movement in China to get those goods together. So that may not be cost effective and that may not be the best option to go. You may be better off sending separate shipments in that instance. But again, that's why companies like ourselves are here. We're here to guide on that sort of thing. We're here to take the lists of suppliers that you buy from, and then we can say, well, look, let's do it this way. This is the best option for you. This is the most cost-effective option for you. Let's consolidate them or let's not consolidate them in this instance and sort of go from there.
Yeah, it makes sense. In the end, what it comes down to is a lot of complex calculations that end up with an effect on time or money, right? So in a way, as the Amazon business owner or the e-commerce seller, whatever we're going to call ourselves, I think I would really encourage people to just kind of think of it as a black box. Give the question to an expert freight forwarder, wait for them to work it out. As long as you trust they know their business. And this is why, you know, podcasts are such a helpful way of checking out people's, you know, precision of thinking. And you're certainly, you know, opening my eyes to a lot of stuff. I thought I'd heard most of the stuff about this stuff, but there's a lot of interesting stuff here. And then once you've made the assessment, I think what this comes down to, and I just want to wrap the episode up on this one. They often say, like, don't think how, think who. So in other words, instead of banging your head against the brick wall of how can I become a freight forward expert and get the stuff out of China and LCL versus container versus air freight, and should I ship a whole container to Amazon or whatever? I mean, we're informing you about all these things. It's important to know what the issues could be. But in the end, I think your decision is simpler than that. It's like, who do I work with to take all this stuff off my plate? You know, because trying to do it yourself, and again, I keep saying this, but honestly, it's not because I expect to make a vast fortune from selling any freight forwarder services to anybody else. It's more like it's just such a whopping pain point that I've experienced, that my clients have experienced, that people in Mastermind experience. I cannot stress enough that trying to learn how to do it yourself is just not the way forward. So I'm going to leave this episode on that thought.
Absolutely.
And we'll come back to talk about lots of other things around the whole freight area. Thank you very much for your time.
Yeah, absolutely, no problem at all. Thank you very much.
Thanks for listening to the 10K Collective podcast. I really hope you found the show helpful. I mentioned the London-based masterminds we've been running since September 2017. Members of the 10K Collective Mastermind make a minimum of about £480,000 a year, well over €600,000 or dollars. To find out more about that mastermind, go to amazingfba.com/10KC, K for kilo, C for Charlie. £1 million mastermind members make a minimum of £1.2 million a year. That's about $1.5 million or euros. To find out more about that mastermind, go to amazingfba.com/MPM. That's M for mother, P for Peter, M for mother. Thanks for listening.